Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. I'm Amanda White.
And this is Sam Dalton.
And today we're talking about Queer Eye as a whole, but really the jumping off point for today is going to be about Karamo and his statement that happened a few months ago when Queer Eye season 10 was wrapping. And this has come back up, you know, on the internet because a People magazine article came out that kind of gave his side of the story. So we're going to get into all of the minutiae of reality TV and the cast itself, but I'm going to orient us.
I believe is most important, which I want to remind you all, love yourselves and protect yourselves. That's why I'm here at home and not there. But continue to watch the show. The crew worked on it and did an amazing job. I want to shout out to the crew. I want to shout out to all the fans. I want to shout out to the executives from Netflix. Thank you for having me for 10 seasons.
A pointed message for Karamo's co-stars there.
What are your thoughts hearing that statement combined with, I'll say, the statement that Gail King read, which is, he was worried about being bullied and he needed to skip the appearance to protect his peace and focus on his mental health.
I have a larger conversation that I don't know how prepared people are to get into, at least at a larger level. But I think something that isn't being discussed enough is the reality that I think there are instances where mental health speak is weaponized. And I think people are so fearful of saying that because it feels like the ultimate vulnerability point of like, well, I shouldn't question somebody because they've said their mental health suffered. I've been wrestling with that because I think at what point is that just avoided? At what point is that like there was a really maybe a big dramatic fight? Something happened, allegations were hurled in both directions, and you didn't want to have to be confronted with any of it, which it's like, if it's a problem that you're a part of and you helped contribute to, at what point do you realize like, well, this is my bed. I have to lie in it. I'm going to get through this tough thing. And then it's over. I don't know. But then like, when you say that, people are like, how dare you tell me that I have to remain in abusive, toxic situations? And it's like, that's not what I'm saying. But also sometimes there's the reality that you need to push through something. There's the reality that you do need to actually engage in the hard conversations and you do need to sit in a discomfort of repair. And I feel like that's what's getting brought up for me with this Karamo thing is I'm like, listen, he does not strike me as somebody that takes things lying down.
On the surface, right? Like if he feels he's going to be bullied, obviously we do not condone bullying. We do not condone harassment or abuse or any of that. It does seem as though they were very shocked when you watch that video. They did not expect him not to come. So why don't I guess get into then the June 2nd article that came out. It was an interview with People magazine. And basically he said he was mentally and emotionally abused for years. And that is why he backed out of the press tour for the show's 10th and final season. He said it came after years of toxicity and bullying from his Queer Eye co-stars. Basically, his assessment is, his evidence is that he was on set. His mom was on set that day, and she was given headphones to listen to him, to listen to the show. And I guess she could hear, you know, everyone had a live mic, and she could hear what the cast members are saying. And apparently, they were saying mean things about Karamo, and his quote is, the thing I know is the tears I saw in my mother's eyes. She kept repeating, I thought they were your friends, and it made me realize I can no longer stay silent about how often I was made to feel like an outsider. So I guess a couple things here. The other context I think is important is that Karamo says that he relapsed. He is sober now, but he relapsed, you know, during the show. He said that he relapsed on drugs and alcohol. and admits that he wasn't an angel on the show either. I do think that obviously, you know, production and everyone denies this and stuff like that. But I do think it is, you know, I never want to say someone's not being abused or someone deserves to feel the way they did. And, you know, I remember specifically there were some like racial things that happened on the show. I remember specifically in one episode, they thought it was funny to pretend to be police officers and like confront Karamo, which, do you remember that?
I do. There was an episode where they were specifically working with someone who is a cop. They organized a prank where the cop pulled them over.
Yes.
And got pretty intense. And I remember in that episode, Karamo was pretty shaken up, which I agreed with. I thought that was a little intense to do that specifically to the one black man that's part of the group. That was what I remember of that.
Upon hearing this stuff, Sam, what are your initial thoughts? And then we'll get deeper.
I think for me, right out of the gate, it's that very fine line that as a mental health professional, you're always walking, which is wanting to validate and respect and empower someone's experience that they talk about, while also understanding that more often than not, there are two sides of a story.
Yep.
And you don't want that to come across as you are looking for a reason to not believe somebody's experience, right? That's not the conversation that we're having here either, of me saying like, well, I think Karamo just made it all up. However, I always find it interesting in a setting like that, where the allegations are made so publicly, where it appears the group is extremely caught off guard. And that it's dealt with so publicly when it seems that it is so fresh and raw. I think those are the dynamics of this situation that make me pause and get really curious of what really happened and what was going on, and really curious of what the other four members' experience and interpretation was slash is. I think that's where I land. Like that, I remember when I watched the clip where Gayle King reads that. And I remember thinking at the time, like, that feels extraordinarily petty. Like right out of the gate, it feels extremely petty. And I just don't think I would handle that situation that way. And it again, it just made me curious of like, well, what are the five stories here? Not just the one story. What are the five stories that are involved with this? And yeah.
I think too, I think it's interesting that it's not like something happened. Like when it first came out, I was like, oh my God, something must have happened the day before this.
Right.
Or like this was a huge thing. And I'm not saying people can't like have like a panic attack the day before, have a very real trauma response that precludes them from doing, you know, their commitments or things like that. But the fact that when he came out, like I was expecting a lot more from this People article to back up kind of the big response he had. Like it felt like a very much like an emergency brake that was pulled. So I expected something to match that emergency. And the fact that the only thing he said was that his mom overheard them talking about him, which in an article I read, like they did say that like Netflix investigated the claims and like pulled clips, and there was like no, like, because Anthony was also interviewed in Variety magazine and he said they were very caught off guard. And yeah, essentially, apparently in another article I read, they said that there weren't any tapes that they could even find. Obviously, I'm not saying Netflix is like, you know, the best. These are all like big
like
tech companies. Yeah. I'm sure there are production issues that are going on. It's just, if you're going to have that much of a response to point to my mom overheard, and you don't even know what they said. You just said your mom was crying. is kind of like, I just don't think this was this like slam dunk that maybe he expected it to be. And I think the reason we're talking about this, because I think anyone listening could be like, okay, great, like this is gossip, why are you guys talking about this? And I think the reason is that, like, not only does it kind of feel like some of this therapy speak is being, you know, used inappropriately, but it also, the source of it matters a lot. With Karamo was the culture person on the show. Mm-hmm. And even more disturbingly, Karamo used to say that he was a licensed social worker.
Wah, wah, wah.
So I did a ton of research to figure out where this came from, how this came about. There is an old website that somehow is still up somewhere that specifically states he is a licensed social worker. Now, I've seen people be like, he studied social work, which also isn't true. He went to F&M and he studied business administration, according to his own LinkedIn profile. There are some people who said he didn't graduate college. I don't know. I'm not going to speculate on that. Some people are just like, he worked as a social worker. You can be a social worker who isn't, you know. Yeah, you go, Sam.
So my licensure is LCSW. In Massachusetts, it's LICSW. So you can practice social work without doing clinical work because you're not able to, because your licensure is not advanced enough. There Yep. is a hierarchy of work that you can do within the social work field. And to attain full clinical freedom, full clinical independence.
Which is doing therapy.
Yes, doing therapy. Clinical therapeutic work. We're not just talking about community work. We're not just talking about social justice, all of which are important. This is not me saying these things are not important. What I am saying is you can do those things without needing clinical certification.
Yeah.
Okay? For me to attain my L. So when I graduated from school, I passed the clinical exam, which was 170 questions, 170 vignettes that I had to read and pick the best answer, and my head exploded. It was a 3-hour exam. I had to take that exam, pass that. You never have to do that again. Thank God. Yeah. However, so then you become a clinical social worker. To attain your L, which is licensed, I needed 3,000 hours of supervised work in addition to 100 specific supervision hours where I was discussing the clinical work that I was doing and being overseen in my work and receiving additional training outside of school in field work.
Yep.
I needed to submit proof of that to the licensing board of the state that I was in, and I had to apply essentially again, prove my education, prove that I took the clinical exam, and then I was finally given my L.
So you cannot call yourself a licensed social worker without at least a master's degree, which he doesn't have. I mean, the Washington Post ran an article about him in 2021 and said that he was a licensed social worker, and then they had to retract it. And then after that retraction, he started referring to himself as more of a life coach. So this was not just like the internet mislabeled him.
Yeah, missing something. Yeah.
And then it gets even deeper with, if you start to look at, like, I want to get into also just like some of the ways that he acted, I think, on the show in terms of, I think, production obviously pushed this, but it's like such a good example of people who do not practice therapy trying to get, like, we've talked about this a lot with, like, you know, Tony Robbins, like big group, you know, exposure work and all of that stuff. We talk about this in the catharsis episode we did, but about how so often we prioritize this like catharsis release as proof of change when you and I both know most real change isn't that dramatic, doesn't, like, the catharsis can happen, but that's not where the change actually happens. And then these shows kind of take people who in queer, I mean, a lot of them are like extremely vulnerable, need support. That's why they or people in their community nominated them. And, you know, I think there's good in Queer Eye also. We're not saying it's all bad, but like vulnerable people. And I think it's very different when you have someone getting a makeover, getting their house done, doing that. And then, I mean, calling it culture when it's like mental health is weird.
Yeah.
And number two, you start getting into like some weird group therapy practices that you're opening someone's trauma up to the world.
So I've watched every single season. I'm a fan of the show. I've enjoyed it. My favorites are Tan, JVN, love Anthony. I think Jeremiah is a baby angel that needs to be protected at all costs. With Karamo, there were moments in his conversations with the how do they address?
I know, as a client.
They're heroes. What do they say? Heroes. Like our heroes.
They do say heroes.
Yeah, they call them heroes. There were times with the heroes where I was like, yeah, I could see how that's a helpful conversation to have with mm-hmm. somebody in the midst of a week like this.
Yeah.
There were other circumstances where I'm like, this is not being dealt with in maybe if we give like editing and production credit, a 2-hour conversation.
Yep.
Right? And I think that was my concern sometimes because I'm with you because what is it? Isn't it that show Extreme Makeover Home Edition?
Mm-hmm.
Like in the early 2000s, they found out later on that most people like either ended up selling the homes or going bankrupt because they could not afford.
Oh, the upkeep of
they
them?
Couldn't afford the upkeep. They couldn't afford the increase in property taxes.
Oh,
they couldn't
God.
Afford like anything.
I did not know that.
Yes.
That is such a good like physical yes. example too. Because we can blame right Biggest Loser on like you
right.
just regained weight. But like
right.
the physical home is such a good example of
is
that.
Is such a good example. And so many of these people struggled with their home upkeep in general, right? The homes were often dirty, not well managed, cluttered, right?
Yep.
Those skills don't disappear because you drop somebody in a brand new, beautiful home.
Totally.
And I think with Queer Eye, my question would more be like, if you want to say like, we truly care about these people's mental health, fine, then pay for 6 months of therapy after the fact.
Yeah.
And it's there for them if they want it and they want to like explore some of these changes. Mm-hmm. And I think it is a powerful show. And I think the people that they find seem so genuine and so kind. And most of them are so grateful for the help, right? Like there were a few over the years that kind of bucked at it or didn't really seem interested in it. But most of the people are like so good and kind, and
yeah.
that's part of what makes the show so incredible. And I think there's some that, yeah, all they might have needed was the confidence boost of a new space and some new clothes and a haircut, right? I think yeah. for some people there was that, but some of the stories, it was like
the magic of it was these people, you know, were amazing and
yes.
they just were, you know, they just needed support and they did deserve. And so, I mean, I remember the first couple seasons, like a lot of the people basically like got a platform and were
yeah.
able to like do something with it and stuff like that. So I'm not saying that those weren't like good people to pick to get support and get their like story out there and stuff like that. But I think the double-edged sword of that is the nature of it though, is like very rarely is someone just needs like a makeover who has this like inspiring type of story.
Yeah.
Like they need more than that. Most of the people that they pick, especially the queer stories, were like super
yeah.
amazing because you had this like community of queer men and people who were supporting them and they were able to provide, I think, like a really unique role in that too. But I always think too, like they act like they're a family and then they like leave and
yes.
that's the nature of the show. That's correct. But I always think of it from the therapist's lens mm-hmm. of like, and I do think Queer Eye tries to be like, let's involve your family. Like they did do a lot of that. Like let's set them up with this, you know, dinner or whatever. But yeah, I just always, I always think about like, do these people feel like they are their family and they're going to be like in their life forever? And like, I remember in the earlier seasons, they used to say things like they would act like they were going to keep in touch with all these people and stuff like that. And it must be like, I'm sure there were some weird situations where people felt like they moved on because it was just a show.
Right. Right. And maybe like when it first started, there might have been a couple that they felt like, no, this is somebody that I would like want to stay in contact with, what have you. But The other interesting angle that I think it brings up, which challenges the whole, like, oh, Karamo has a therapy background or, like, what have you, is what I sometimes felt uncomfortable with in the conversations that he was having with people. It felt like it was pushing the narrative that therapy is something that can be done quickly.
Yeah.
That these internal changes just need, exactly as you said, like the right massive life-changing moment.
Yeah.
And there's this distinct before and after where you were one person before and then you're another person after. And all you needed was a really solid cry for 30 minutes with someone witnessing you. And now things are better. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a frustrating stereotype that people have, because they go to therapy and they realize how challenging it is and how time consuming it can be. And how, I mean, I've worked with clients for 3-4 years that at the 3-4 year mark, we all of a sudden have another breakthrough of an understanding of something that I hadn't been seeing or they hadn't been seeing, right? Because that is the reality of dealing with a life as a whole.
Yeah.
Not just in an isolated moment when you're not trying to isolate it to a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes in some of the moments where people were upset or would express, you know, this realization that they'd opened up, right? There were times where I was like, I wish this was being painted as a starting moment.
Mm-hmm.
Not an end cap to something.
Yes, I think the whole show really hinges on you have all the tools now.
Yeah.
And you can just put them. You have the right product. You have the right makeup. You have the right clothes. You have the right house.
The right food.
You have the right breakthrough. You have the right food. And now, and to their credit, right? Like, they try to teach someone a recipe. They teach them how, they don't just give them hair products. They teach them how to use it. But yeah, it's the skill is the harder part, actually. Mm-hmm. It's the learning how to do it and making it a habit is much more challenging than that initial learning phase. And in some cases, I think it's better than nothing. But I also think when we're talking about therapy, some of the like extreme catharsis, like I'm thinking about in New Orleans, there was an episode with like a bunch of kids who were in a fraternity.
Yeah, I remember that one.
They had this like what only can be described as like trauma dumping.
Yeah, group therapy. Yeah.
And I get what Karamo was trying to do. He was like having them talk about, right, like he was having them be vulnerable and talk about being a man and how like, you know, men are taught to not be vulnerable with each other and things like that. But obviously you can argue that maybe they weren't forced to do anything. But like also I think about like the pressure dynamics that happen when you're in a group and the wanting to do it right. And I remember, what is his name? I'm trying to think. DeMario is one of them who broke down. He admitted he doesn't know what he feels. He talked about carrying massive financial and personal stress as a broke college student. He lacked reliable transportation. And then he confessed that he frequently hid his anxiety and deep-seated fears under a mask of masculine toughness. Which is like so deep, so complex. And again, I think we were like, amazing. This person is sharing all this. They're being so vulnerable, which is great. But it is like the same as people who like, just because someone can talk about this doesn't mean that, especially like their community, where they're from, even if their brothers were able to like be more open. The promise of this episode was that he, like Karamo, transformed these guys into, from drinking buddies into authentic support. And that is just like such a big, tall order that also it's like one moment of being vulnerable doesn't change who someone is. Like it shows a possibility, but there are also like ramifications to like that forced vulnerability when you don't have the structure to support it when you go back to your life.
Right. It is officially summer, and I have an incredibly controversial opinion, which is I actually don't love summer. There are elements of summer that I enjoy. There are elements of summer that I like. I don't like summer, and that is because I would rather be cold than hot all the time. There's nothing worse to me than being hot. And sleeping hot is even worse. And since I am a solution-focused person, I am constantly thinking of what I can do to alleviate this problem and make it better for me, because it is so uncomfortable for me to be hot when I sleep. And one of the solutions that I have found is twofold. It is the Cozy Earth Bamboo Sheet Set and the Cozy Earth Bamboo Pajamas. When I tell you that these things have changed my life and made summer heat and the summer season that much more enjoyable, I cannot speak more highly to it. The material is so breathable. It is so comfortable. It feels like you are wrapped in a cloud while feeling like you are remaining cool at the same time. I don't know how to describe it. You're just going to have to try it. Truly, they are incredible. And one of the things that I absolutely love about this brand is that their clothing carries a lifetime warranty. Any piece of clothing that you buy, lifetime warranty, you can return it anytime, get a replacement. Their bedding has a 10-year warranty, 10 years on your bedding. That is crazy. And it just speaks to how much they trust the quality of their product. Treat yourself to the cool, easy comfort your summer nights have been missing. Head to cozyearth.com and use my code NUANCEBOGO, that's NUANCEBOGO, to buy one, get one free. Did you hear me? They are doing buy one, get one free right now. Mix and match across sheets, pajamas, and towels. That's code NUANCEBOGO, NUANCEBOGO, at cozyearth.com for buy one, get one free. And if you see a post-purchase survey, please feel free to mention that you heard about Cozy Earth right here. There's something like I want to add to this as like we're getting into this conversation, and especially like with these deep dive episodes that we've been doing. I want to stress that like we're not being contrarian just to be like, we're not being contrarian for contrarian's sake. And I think what we're trying to introduce with these deep dive episodes is that this shit is complicated. And something like a queer eye can be incredible in some episodes and really change some people's lives and be incredibly touching and make me cry. I've cried multiple mm-hmm. times in the show, seeing the transformation, quote unquote, mm-hmm. you know, seeing people. The one that would get me the most were the physical and the clothing transformations mm-hmm. in people, like seeing themselves elevated in this way that they didn't think was for them, right? Like mm-hmm. there's power in that. What we're talking about here is this question of, was it irresponsible to introduce like this element of the show mm-hmm. with somebody that wasn't actually fully trained to navigate these types of conversations and moments.
And worse, who pretended
yes.
to be able to do that. So like,
yes.
especially the show started
2018.
Yeah. So this Washington Post article that came out and then was redacted was in 2021. And if you look at older Reddit threads, people are arguing about how he is a licensed therapist or a licensed social worker. So I don't think it is off base to say that for a number of years, people thought that.
Yes.
And it was, yes. which means that Karamo allowed those rumors to exist. And I think it only got fact checked when the Washington Post actually dug into it.
Mm-hmm. And that is, if you want to address that it is coaching,
mm-hmm.
there's a different standard there.
Yeah.
Which I think they tried to, but they yeah. also presented it as like it was a conversation with somebody that has a therapy background.
Yes.
Which gives it a level of like credential that you can't get another way.
Or like, I remember there was one episode where I think he like brought in someone's mom who yes. like wasn't ready to talk.
Yeah.
Yet, or he did some family stuff like that. And I was like, oh, like, well, I get why the producers pushed for this, but this is not
no
good.
There was one episode where someone was so resistant. So resistant. It was either in this most recent season or the one just before. I think it was the first season that Jeremiah was a part of. So that would have been the one just nine, before this think, one. Yeah. And he was trying to like have these conversations with her and it wasn't working. And it almost was just like, why are we doing this? Like, cut your losses and run. Like, this isn't even interesting. It just feels like you're forcing somebody to be a part of something they have no desire to be a part of. And I think if you had someone who had what I would classify as legitimate therapeutic experience on that set, I would be having conversations with the producers of, I don't think this is helpful.
Yep.
Like, I don't think it is helpful to take somebody who is so resistant and so defensive and put this version of them on camera that
and
will live.
What an interesting, like, you could do a talking head on that, and that would be really interesting to me.
Yeah. Like, I just think, I don't know. And to me, it goes back to, like, you know, the Secret Lives of Mormon Wives of it all, where we've talked about, like, what are we putting on TV? And I don't know. I'm truly not trying to have some Pollyanna worldview here of, like, there's always right ways to do things and wrong things to do things. But it's, like, to start initiating these conversations of, like, was there a ball dropped in some ways?
I mean, I think it's reality TV is this non-black and white sort of thing. And I also think it's a really good lesson of, like, everyone who's like, you know, I'm just apolitical. Politics don't impact me. It's just like, no.
It like, does.
When you're taking quote unquote heroes, a lot of them have traumatic backgrounds, which is inherently political.
Yeah.
Which means you can't just like have these inspiring stories without the context that caused someone to rise above them or whatever.
Right.
Like the only way to do this show in a background from that is maybe people who like already had therapy and like were much better, were much more stable, didn't have as severe of a before or after. And it was more like surface level clothes,
house, food,
hairstyle. Like culture was culture. No, there was an original Fab Five. So culture was something, I guess, in the original Queer Eye, but it must have been different.
It was very different. It wasn't the therapeutic piece. I mean, keep in mind, like, Queer Eye launched really like on the heels of like Me Too. And I think the explosion of therapy speak.
Yes.
And I think there is an element of that in the show.
Yeah.
As well.
Oh, okay. So Jai Rodriguez was the culture vulture, and he focused on etiquette, social outings, and engaging with the community.
See, that makes sense. I wish they had kept that up.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, is almost the missing piece to it.
I agree.
There's like a direct teaching element.
Yeah.
You're not cracking somebody open and leaving and being like, hope you deal with that, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or like calling a sibling who you're like estranged from and being like, I'm going to facilitate this healing conversation.
When we decided that we were going to do this one, I was thinking and doing my own research and kind of thinking of like my relationship with this show because I do enjoy this show. And like I said, I've watched every season. But I was kind of excited to have this opportunity to kind of explore it differently because there were conversations that I would see Karamo have where I was like, oh, that is big to do with somebody that you have just met and somebody whose life you're going to bounce from like, and that's the only conversation you'll ever have with them about that thing. And it goes back to like, it's almost like this idea of consent. Like, can you actually consent to like openly sharing this information where you are in a pressure cooker environment where you have a director and a producer that are telling you like, no, okay, so this is your time where you're going to have your conversation with Karamo and like, what are you going to talk about? Right? Like, you have cameras on you. You know, they're ripping apart your house as you speak. You know, you have to go in the kitchen with Anthony at some fine dining restaurant somewhere with utensils you've never used before. Like you just wonder like, what was the set like? Mm-hmm. Like, what is that background experience like for somebody who's filming that. And is it appropriate? I don't know. I feel kind of torn on it hearing this. I feel torn on it.
I think also to like circle back to where we started a bit with like the cast dynamics and stuff like that, because I think they intertwine sort of with production and the choices that are made and stuff like that. I just think it is like so unhealthy also how we need people to be best friends who work together.
Ooh, that's an interesting point.
Obviously, like, I think they liked each other a lot. I think the show is very like warm, and you know, I think the hard part about it is I think like the show really worked, especially in the beginning, because they seemed like they were like best friends and they loved each other and they showed up at different events, and it's, you know, an important part of the show because they live together in, you know, a house
during and all filming of that.
But like, I guess it's also like, are we, I guess it just brings me back to like the Karamo stuff about saying he was bullied and stuff. I'm just like, how do we not think that there are going to be disagreements and dynamics? Like, you, I always think about things from a group perspective of like odd numbers are always like harder to kind of like do because someone can always be left out. And just, I think, unrealistic maybe expectations also. Like, I wish if Karamo had felt he was really bullied like this, that there were more serious like allegations that would have come out. And I want to be careful when I say that, because I don't want it to seem like I'm saying like only real survivors should speak out. But I also think, especially where I go to as someone who did cause harm during my addiction and has yet to see someone who relapses, who doesn't act in ways that they're not proud of on some level, and who needed in their statement with people to address that they weren't perfect. And there was also, it was dropped, but there was an allegation of sexual harassment from Karamo to someone else on set that was dissolved. But he talks about it, and he said, like, there was a flirtatious thing, and, you know, the charges were dropped and stuff like that, or the investigation was dropped. But I don't know, I just think that all really muddies the picture and just makes me be like, maybe we also need to expect reality shows to be unhealthy like this.
Ooh.
Just like we expect, you know, the cast of Real Housewives and Secret Lives of Mormon Wives and, you know, Love Island and all of that to be filled with drama and stuff like that.
I really like that you brought that up, because I don't think I've ever put that feeling together in like language. But there, I'll start here to circle back to the allegations that he laid out. I always struggle. I have struggled with this across celebrity, across industry, across anything. When there is a vague statement released that throws out a really big word that gives no example of what happened. I struggle with that because I always say to myself, what is the purpose of that then? What are you trying to get out of when you know how to play the game? You know the level of speculation that is going to open up. You know the conversations that are going to be opened up in this new information ecosystem that we all live in, right? Like, what do you get out of throwing a proverbial nuclear warhead like that into the world, and you provide absolutely no, like, my specific problem was with Tan because we really struggled to get along and there were some, you know, like interactions that weren't great. That's why. Like, I guess.
Or you end the season, like, you, I'm sorry, but like lie and say you got sick and that's why you couldn't come to the taping.
I agree. No, totally.
You show up and you are really cold with everyone and then you go about your day, and then later, a couple months later, you say like, yeah, we didn't get along and I felt excluded and I felt left out and blah, 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 blah.
I'm with you. I guess, like, to me, when you do stuff like that, it like, in a group dynamic, when you pull a stunt like that, on the public stage in that way. It kind of negates the seriousness of it. And I'm not talking about this like in every circumstance, right? Mm-hmm. But I think when you throw out a statement like that, that you know is going to be read to them live on air without them knowing what it is, and maybe without them having the full picture, it's just petty. Like, it's just petty. You are intelligent enough to know the ramifications of that type of rug pull. And it just makes me question the overall intention of it.
Mm-hmm. It coincides with he just launched an AI coaching app, of course.
Oh, my God.
So, let me read you some of his website.
Oh, girl. Really? You're gonna dredge back up the Queer Eye drama in order to call attention to the fact that you have an AI coaching app?
It's called KE by Karamo with a dash over it. So I don't know how you pronounce that, but where is this? Yes, he launched the wellness app and then talked about this. So that is why. June 2nd, he launched the wellness app.
Oh, that just negates it to me. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. If you're like, yeah. I'm all for trying to turn your pain.
And then this, yes. And then, oh my God, the People Mag, because I didn't actually get the People magazine, physical copy. And the front of it is surviving my reality TV nightmare. The shocking drama behind the scenes of Queer Eye. For the first time, the host reveals years of bullying and toxic behavior on set. Oh, he's framing his relapse into addiction as their fault. And how he's finally found peace. Again, I'm not saying that he could have absolutely been bullied. I just, and there's such a thing as like smart marketing.
Yes, yes. Taking advantage.
But it just, it smells just hard when he's weaponizing therapy speak, when you put into context his own relapse, when you put into context he doesn't really take accountability for how like his behavior was during the relapse, when you take into account him falsifying or allowing people to believe he was a licensed therapist when he wasn't. He also has it delivers real-time guidance and personalized recommendations in Karamo's voice, knowledge, and personality.
Ooh.
So it pretends to kind of be your therapist. Okay. KE Wellness. It is Rachel Hollis in a website.
No!
The header. I see you, and I need you to hear this. You are not broken. You are ready. Three simple steps to real growth. Speak to Karamo. Karamo's AI is with you anytime you need it. Real guidance, real support, exactly what matters most. Personalized wellness plan across the six keys of life. Find your people, a community of like-minded people, obviously. Also, nowhere does he say that he is a coach or that he is a life coach, that he has anything. Instead, literally, this is his own bio from his website. Emmy-nominated host, culture expert on Queer Eye, host of, the daytime talk show, described by the New York as a sympathetic talk therapist wrapped inside a life coach, which we could break down.
Whoa.
As the problem with that.
Okay.
He draws from his background in social work and his own journey through adversity, including abuse, addiction, and identity struggles to guide others towards their most authentic selves. You already have the answer. Let's unlock it together. He translates decades of trusted guidance into daily accessible wellness practices. And it gets worse. The six keys to living fully. Fitness. Of course, it has a fitness component.
Of course. Protein.
Nutrition. The second one. Personalized meal plan with recipes. Meditation. Sobriety, which, I approve of. Good job. Relationships. Self-esteem. What would you like to say, Sam? Break the cycle.
I need to be more bold. That's what I'm learning. I need to be more bold in what I am capable of because I actually have credentials and real life experience. I'm tired.
I mean, I don't think it's going well. And I think that is an indicator that the tide is turning.
Yeah.
A bit, which I am glad to see.
Well, because I think people have made the realization that those simple, like, just do four things and your life comes together. Your life doesn't come together because it's not that simple. It never has been and it never will be. Those things are mere tools for you to use while you ride through the real work, which is never actually done, which is never actually complete, which is uncertainty everywhere. There's nothing that, like, there's nothing you can do right now in this moment that will guarantee any particular outcome in the future. All of these coaches, and we've had this conversation before on the episode where we debated the difference between a therapist and a coach. There's a time and a place for it, for sure, depending on what you're wanting to talk about. But my issue is all of these coaches are simply selling certainty. They're selling certainty and they are guaranteeing, quote unquote, to people that this thing will fix them. Mm-hmm. And fix is the key word here. And the reason why we as therapists struggle so hard to market ourselves in a lot of ways is because we don't have sexy terminology to market to you. Because we're like,
some therapists do now. And
well, some, but that's
big eye roll.
That's a conversation for a different day. But for me, this has been like a pivot that I'm trying to make in my own content as I've kind of sat with myself of how I, in my own way, have contributed to the therapy speak phenomenon and all of that and kind of this like hyping people up all the time. I just think we're not being fair to people in telling them that if you do these three things, these four things, these five things, everything will eventually be okay and perfect. Because that's just not life. Yep. And I think it sets everybody up for failure because they say to themselves, I have the fitness routine. I have the diet down. I have the boundaries. I have this. I have that. Why am I still struggling? Why am I still struggling? And I think that is a larger question that more people are now wrestling with. And I don't think there's a lot of avenues to help them wrestle with that because people are now so mistrustful of therapists in some ways because of the coaching industry and kind of this like, see, like therapy doesn't work because they can't talk to you like I can. They can't tell you the things that I can tell you. It's really just like this. You don't really have to talk about it.
Totally agree. Yeah, I think it's unsurprising, but obvious sort of how mm-hmm. the, you know, like how this sort of played out. Like you can see it
mm-hmm.
all. Yeah, I think I really enjoyed Queer Eye for a really long time. I watched the first 8 seasons of it. And I think it's complicated. Reality TV is complicated both in the mm-hmm. cast and in the people who participate. I think lines of consent mm-hmm. are ambiguous. Mm-hmm. And I don't really know. I don't have a solution for it. I think my biggest note is like, let's stop claiming we're going to heal people's mental health on TV. Let's stop acting like, you know, real love will save you or this mm-hmm. experience of being on a reality TV show is like a growth opportunity where you're going to learn so much about yourself. And I think that, yeah, we need to reflect also as like what a lot of reality TV can become, like trauma porn. And I'm obsessed with what you said about the home makeover example, because I just think that is like,
yeah,
so on point. You can't blame someone's person. Like you can so easily blame someone personally, when the relationship doesn't work out, when they regain the weight, when,
right,
I don't know, they don't stay healed in their mental health or whatever. But the housing example is just so clear. We don't set people up for success on these reality TV shows because it is not actually about success. Them healing or getting better or being successful. It is a TV show mm-hmm. that cares about ratings and numbers. And some are better than others. Some are significantly worse than others. Some mm-hmm. lean into the trauma porn aspect so much more than others. Mm-hmm. But it's all a little murky.
Yeah. As per usual, zero answers. Just throwing out problems. That's what we do. But think of this, if you're sitting here and you're like, why does it feel like there's no closure? Because I think for some things there's not.
Yeah.
I think for a lot of these things, what we're introducing in these conversations is that all of it is true at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's a good show. There were some really solid, strong episodes. I, you know, really respect some of the members of the cast and am a fan of them. Others I'm not. They might have gotten a little carried away with certain parts of the show, and Karamo might have, in addition to maybe some of these things happening, he has his own accountability that he needs to take for certain things that is being conveniently left out of the narrative. Yeah, I think this is, so many of these conversations are, and even like the Britney episode from the other week,
mm-hmm.
it's really like allowing you to practice sitting in the uncertainty of it all.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's okay, like even in yourself and in your own life, if you hold conflicting truths within yourself.
Like, everyone does.
Everyone like, does. Like, yeah. That's, we're so complicated and we're so layered. And part of like actual, if you really want to keep up with this trend, like healing work is learning how to sit in that space. And I get asked a lot, like, well, what do you mean when you say like be uncomfortable? What do you mean when, mm-hmm. when I say like sit in the discomfort? If you've like sat through this episode
mm-hmm.
and you found yourself being like, well, I don't know, or like, oh, like, but that and that and that, that's practicing sitting in that space. Mm-hmm. That cognitive dissonance of not understanding something and allowing yourself to ride through those moments of uncertainty. That is the skill that you need to practice that will allow you to feel like you're living a fulfilling life.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that you know all the answers to things or that everything makes sense. It's just that you allow yourself to kind of like sit in a space like this and kind of go, mm-hmm. I don't know. And I'm okay not knowing. Like, mm-hmm. I don't need to know the Queer Eye drama.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to know like the incident. I would love it. I would love to sit JVN down and get the tea. I mean, I'm only human. I'm just a girl, you know? But, like, I can look at things for what they are and have an assessment of it and wrestle with it.
Mm-hmm. And my contribution to this is going to be, we are all living and dying at the same time. So life is a contradiction.
Amanda's
like, resident sad girl.
Did you know we die? That's how I want to end. Did you know we're all dying slowly?
We're living and dying at the same time.
We're all decaying slowly as we live and laugh.
This is ambivalence. This is the contradiction.
You're very right.
Oh my goodness.
That's all. Wow.
We love you guys so much. Love. If you stuck around until the end of this.
You're the best.
If you like more of our unhinged behavior, you should definitely check us out on Substack, nuancedneeded.substack.com. That is the energy of a lot of these. We just did one about, we talked about anti-feminism and daycare wars. We've talked about the anti-therapy movement. That's a really good episode that we get into, and a lot more.
Yeah, and as per usual, anything that you can do to rate, review, share, subscribe, get the word out, it would mean the world to us.
Bye.
Bye.